When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, my name is Alex, and this is Lunchbox Radio. Now, if you've read the title of the episode, which undoubtedly you have if you're listening to the episode, my brain always forgets that when I'm recording this. I make it like a big secret because I'm actively forgetting that I put the title in. But you know what we're talking about today, and if you are so deep into anime that you're listening to an anime podcast specifically like this one here, then you know why we're talking about it today. But just in case you've been under a fucking rock since last Thursday at the time of this recording, last Thursday, the unexpected death of Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, those are the two most famous things, but he's also done things like he did character design for a bunch of things, Dragon Quest, the video game series, being among them. He also did a widely loved show and manga before Dragon Ball called Dr. Slump. And also Sandland, which is just in the back of my head there. But so this prompted me to do something that was admitted, I will fully admit it, to be odd. And that is, it prompted me to rewatch Dragon Ball Z. Now, I've rewatched Dragon Ball Z. I've rewatched the first 50 episodes specifically of Dragon Ball Z a number of times. And the reason why that, why 5-0 of the first 50 episodes is true is because that is from the Saiyan saga all the way, I think, through the Frieza saga. And that is like, that's really core Dragon Ball. That's before Cell, but deep in enough where you really get the meat of it. Now, obviously I haven't binged all of that in that week. That would be all I was doing. I do have a life to live, but it struck me when I was writing my, like, so when I was spilling my feelings into an Instagram post, as lots of people now do when a famous person who really affected them dies, we all kind of flock now to social media to talk about it, to talk through it, to celebrate that person's work, to mourn that person's passing. And I found myself writing something that wasn't so much about Dragon Ball Z or Akira Toriyama's work, but what his work gave to the people who grew up with it, the kids who grew up with it, like me or many anime fans of my generation. If you've seen Cosplay Fiend on TikTok or wherever he's followable, I know he's also on Instagram Reel, but I know primarily over on TikTok. And I've talked to him before on this podcast. You can go find that in the feeds, in whatever you use to listen to this. But he talked about Dragon Ball Z. There are people like that you wouldn't expect to be talking about Dragon Ball and Akira Toriyama ever. And the thing, so, and I can't overstate this. The thing that you can't experience now is you can't experience the kind of monocultural thing that anime as a property was when I was a kid in the 90s. You just can't. The world isn't built to deliver things in that way anymore. It can deliver them on a smaller, much smaller scale, but by and large, in terms of anime, things that are quote unquote deep in the deep in the medium, meaning like far removed from the big shonen action thing, are not anymore. Are not these mystical things anymore. If you look at a show like, say, Frieren, which I've also talked about on this podcast, it's big in a way that if a show like that, and shows like that, shows not exactly like Frieren, but in the same, that have kind of the same chill, depressive vibes. Does that make any sense? Chill, depressed vibes. Have come out before, but they haven't gone as wide because the medium wasn't set up as an industry even to, like, capitalize that and get that in front of the most eyeballs. So when I was growing up, you know, kids watched Dragon Ball Z, but that was the beginning of... That was the beginning of the bubble for anime, if that makes any sense. That was the beginning of, like, anime becoming this big, huge force for in America, for American kids and also kids around the world. I mean, I'm not sure if it's a real headline, but I wouldn't be a bit fucking surprised if it was a real headline. I saw that, like, the Mexican cartels, the South American cartel, have basically declared a ceasefire, because they're just all in fucking mourning. They're just all in their, like, weird drug hideouts and being like, well, creator of, like, one of the things that makes me understand what it is to be macho is just gone from this earth. We all need to, like, put down our guns, look at each other and say, like, you going to cry? Yeah. You going to cry? Yeah. We're all cool for, like, a month. And like that, like I said, that sounds insane until you understand what it was like to grow up in Latin America when Dragon Ball Z was out. It was huge in America. It was, like, unfathomably huge in Latin America. And so I found myself wanting to remind myself of how it made me feel, because there's a weird thing that happens to you the first time you watch a show, is that, like, it encapsulates this feeling of your first experience with watching that show, and a little piece of that will always be there for you when you come back to that show. And that's basically describing the feeling of nostalgia. Like, when you have nostalgia for your favorite comic book characters, you don't necessarily have nostalgia for your favorite comic book characters. You have nostalgia for the stuff that intersects with that, with experiencing that property. You have nostalgia when you have nostalgia for Dragon Ball Z. You don't super have nostalgia for Dragon Ball Z. That's part of it. But what you have nostalgia for is coming back after a fucked up day, after a really rough day of school, sitting down at the TV and turning it on and catching it. And being so happy that you caught it. And giving yourself as a child just away to that thing. Just giving yourself over to the mind of Akira Toriyama and the animators at Toei Animation, and just being there with those characters, going along with that story, however twisted and weird it got. And granted, the first runs of the original runs of Dragon Ball Z in the late 80s, early 90s were definitely edited. And there were reasons why they were edited. But before we get fully into it, I think you can tell by now I'm going to change the opening to the opening we all want to hear in our souls. We're talking about Dragon Ball Z. Now, before I get back into, like, reminiscing and the way Dragon Ball Z all makes us all feel, because that's really important to the legacy that Akira Toriyama created to give to the anime world, I want to bring up something a little odd. As a direct example of what I'm going to talk about later, and that is the fact that when, definitely before episode 20, maybe even before episode 10, probably before episode 10, the scene where Goku is already dead, and he's traveling Snake Way, and he almost falls off of Snake Way. And the clouds part, and you see this big swirling, like, vortex. It's like, we're going to take you into the Home for Infinite Losers, or as it actually is, Hell, but the Home for Infinite Losers was what they called it in the original, like, in the original edited version of Dragon Ball Z, of which it is heavily edited. We'll get to that, an example of that next. These little ghost hands, these little black ghost hands come out and, like, grab at him and almost, like, pull him down. And if you've seen that, and you've seen the human transmutation scene from Full Metal Alchemist, like, a bell goes off in your head, like, ding, 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 ding. Oh, those look like the hands that deconstruct Al's entire body and Ed's leg and arm. And that's a huge part of what you need to know if you are... pretty new to anime, and you haven't, and somehow you dodged Dragon Ball Z on your way in. You're like, what's the big deal? That's the big deal. It's this thing became a kind of touchstone for not just shonen anime, but anime as a whole, kind of in perpetuity. If you look at shonen main characters, they all kind of branch off from Goku. If you look at a lot of stylistic choices, they all kind of branch off from Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. Now, there was certainly stuff before it, you know, in many, 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 many ways. Sailor Moon, and I forget the creative Sailor Moon name, but Sailor Moon has the same kind of effect for anime and shoujo anime respectively. And you see a little bit of Sailor Moon in actually an early character design in Dragon Ball Z, because you see this character of one of the blonde attendant in the Snake Princess's palace, who we'll get to her in a second. She reminds you a lot of, like, what if Serena from Sailor Moon only had the one ponytail and was blue and in a Chinese dress made out of snake scales? Like, she has that kind of, like, 1980s magical girl vibe, and a lot of the a lot of the of that cast of characters of like the Snake Way, like cat the Snake Princess cast have that vibe to them, including a little the Snake Princess. But another way, a way that I always forget that Dragon Ball Z was edited was they took stuff out. And they took stuff out either because it was like the joke was too gross for, like, they almost definitely took out Master Roshi, like, just sexually harassing Bulma to the end of the goddamn earth. Just all the time. Just all the time. They took out, like, Gohan falling asleep naked. They took certain things out because it was like, this is supposed to be a kid's show and, like, that stuff isn't for kids. But they also, at least we've deemed it not for kids in America, but also they took out a scene where this blonde, random Snake Princess attendant takes out a gun and plays Russian roulette and subsequently shoots herself in the head. And is totally fine next scene. But, like, whoa. Whoa. And if you don't remember this, I encourage you to go use your Crunchyroll subscription if you have one. If you don't, what are you doing listening to this? Seriously. It's all of Dragon Ball, everything, I'm pretty sure, is on Crunchyroll, including movies, which is wild. But you can definitely go watch, like, the first... You'll get to it before episode 20. The first 20 episodes of Dragon Ball will definitely do you. You'll get to some of that. To definitely the Russian roulette Snake Princess attendant girl. At the very least. But the thing that might stand out to you if you're not super familiar with Dragon Ball Z is it was goofy. It was just goofy. It was goofy in a way that I don't think gets highlighted enough. And lots of Akira Toriyama stuff is that fucking goofy. It is just, it's bananas. It's cartoon bullshit. It's Looney Tunes nonsense. It's hilarious. There's always this, like, slight jokey quality to it. But the things that people remember are, like, the over 9,000 meme that takes place in the middle of the Saiyan saga, or the Saiyan invasion saga. The things people remember from it are, like, the big bombastic fight scenes, because more and more that's what it became. And there was less and less of that, like, goofiness to it. But I think there's something really important there. I think there's something really... smart there in that this show gave its audience of mostly young male, although my friend Lauren is a diehard Dragon Ball Z fan, of mostly young male fans a permission that you could be the big strong main character energy, beat everybody on in the entire world, strongest in the world, but still be kind of goofy. Still have fun. Like, the world didn't need to be so self-serious and dark and brooding and eating people's arms for breakfast. But that created space for shonen anime to have that, like, goofy side. And if you're wondering what that looks like in, like, a modern shonen anime, if you look at something like Attack on Titan, which is so, like, oppressingly, just insanely, disturbingly depressing. It is like, you can watch that and you can, like, feel like the world's ending. And then you have a character like Levi, who's a total neat freak. Who's beyond, who's like OCD, has to clean things from like sealing the floor constantly. Neat freak. A gag like that doesn't necessarily make it into this kind of show without Dragon Ball Z creating space years before it to have gags like that. If you look at, and if you've been following social media since last Thursday, you've seen the like statements from other manga creators, and it kind of doesn't matter who. They're all like, I wouldn't be here without Dragon Ball. Like, he was the thing that made me want to draw. He was the thing that made me want to do this. There's a gag that about Araki and JoJo's that like that JoJo's is like a deeply influential thing, and it super is. It super is like, but that has looped back around at this point to like shows making JoJo's references that are like in on the joke of like everybody who writes manga or draw the anime have just seen or read JoJo's, like, just, we know this. And so like they're making explicit references that are like shot for shot in some shows at this point. But the thing about Dragon Ball is about Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z is they created the form of shonen action shows that would evolve into the like big pillar that it is in the anime industry now. Because if you look at a show like Frieren, this thing is beautiful. This thing is haunting. This thing is incredible. But my gut feeling is more people are watching something like Demon Slayer, which is just cell for cell a worse show. Like, I don't have anything against Demon Slayer. I don't think it's badly produced. I don't necessarily think it's a bad show. But it's not at the same bar as something like Frieren. The thing about a lot of shonen action shows, and this is even true of Dragon Ball Dragon Ball Z in some respects, is that they are doing a very specific thing, and when they do it really well, they should be rewarded for it. But they are not complex, difficult to understand things. The thing that makes Dragon Ball stand out is that it has this, Dragon Ball the property stand out, is that it has an attention to detail and a real memory and ability to hold its, to take a story, to take pieces of a story and move them forward. So for example, and this is a simple example, and then I'll go back and give you another one. Vegeta is introduced as a bad guy. But when Vegeta is first introduced, they have him do horrible things to this bug planet. They have this whole hero narrative with Nappa and Vegeta where they are regarded as heroes because they let themselves, they go to this planet thinking they can wipe all the inhabitants off that planet and sell it for a good price. They get to the planet, they're like, this thing is trash, it's worthless, we might as well leave. And then they get apprehended by a bunch of fucking bug people. And they get sent to prison. And you're like, wait, what? They let themselves get sent to prison because they want to have some fun. And in doing so, they get to fight a big evil monster bug. They have a little bit of fun. But they inadvertently, like, as a side effect to just, like, getting to fight a big monster bug because they felt like it, save this whole bug people society. And as they're going off the planet, they stop, and Vegeta's like, I've got some unfinished business, and Mappa's like, the fuck? And he gets out, and he goes, this planet has a real bug problem. And then he annihilates the entire planet. He just wipes them out of existence. That is done to show you, this is a bad fucking dude. This is a real piece of shit. But that was a planet full of bug people. It just was. There was no... And everybody involved, including Akira Toriyama, made sure there was no... confusing them for humans. There were human qualities, but they were still so far... They were far enough away from humans... We were like, oh, okay, bug people. That, like, he's a terrible person. He killed a happy couple, but bug people. Once you get to human world, the person who kills people, the person who is evil, the person who interacts and fights people outside of the protagonist is Nappa. And if you know anything about Dragon Ball Z outside of the Team 4 Star version of Dragon Ball Z, in which Nappa is alive and still very much, like, around, like, he's Trunks' uncle. It's very hilarious and weird. But Nappa is dead by the end of the Saiyan saga. Nappa is dead. So Nappa is the one who's doing all of these horrible, fucked up things. Like, in the opening, in the Rock the Dragon opening, Nappa is the one who fucking, like, cuts through a fighter jet like butter. Nappa is the one who's running around, like, causing global scale fucking catastrophes. Vegeta, like, sitting eating fruit on a rock for a large portion of that. He's not... at least at first, not outwardly, he's disdainful of humanity, but he's not, like, out to murder them all immediately. He'll say he is, but he's not, but they make sure to stop short of him doing it. And that lets him be redeemed later on down the line. Because he becomes a main character. He becomes the main supporting character, actually. He becomes, like, best friends with fucking Goku, or as he calls him, Kakarot. And this show has always done that. Its first three episodes, when it deals with Raditz, are like, You remember Piccolo, the big bad guy from Dragon Ball? He's a good guy now. And Tien, Yajirobe, even Yamcha to some extent, were all antagonists at some point. Even if briefly, like Yamcha, were all antagonists at some point from Dragon Ball. And, like, Yajirobe, they don't need to keep Yajirobe around, but Toriyama does. Toriyama definitely does. And, like, they have weird little storylines and check-ins with Yajirobe all the fucking time. You see Korin all the time. You see Baba. You see, you know, Kami all the time. And this was something that you would not made clear when we were all kids and, like, young otakulings in, like, sitting in our living room staring at a TV too closely, is what Toriyama managed to do with Dragon Ball Z is what Naruto would attempt to do and kind of a little fail with Boruto. And that is, he had a story that was finished. He had a universe that he had wrapped up. And then he took everything from that universe and he transferred it
to a new series. He made a complete continuation that would really outstrip the original thing. And that form is clearly something that influenced Kishimoto when he went. It's not Kishimoto necessarily, but it's clearly something that influenced what they did with Naruto. With Naruto into Boruto. If they did that, if they had the conversations about starting Boruto off of the back of Naruto and didn't have a conversation about, we're going to do a Dragon Ball and say, essentially, we're going to do a Dragon Ball Z here. Then that's insane. Because that's just fully what happened. And if you watch the early episodes of Dragon Ball Z, that show kind of wants to be about Gohan. Like, there's a version of Dragon Ball Z that is where Gohan is the main character. Now, it didn't end up being that way, and I don't think it was ever intended to be that way, but I think that the first 13, 12 episodes of Gohan basically being by himself and then training with Piccolo. Goku's like a side project. They have some episodes in there that focus on Goku, but largely what they do is they cut to Goku running on Snake Way for a couple minutes at the end to be like, yeah, and Goku's still here. But mainly, you are tuning in specifically to hang out with Gohan and like bask in his training stuff. And every once in a while, they have peppered throughout there to remind you of the overarching point here. Like a training sequence with Yamcha, Krillin, and Tien, or a specific episode with Goku on Snake Way, until they get to King Kai, and then you have the deeply goofy introduction of King Kai, including a scene in which King Kai pees on screen. And then you have the Bubbles the Monkey Chasing 2 episodes. You have the Gregory 2 episodes. And it's just like, it's still all done with this goofiness and this joyousness and this fun that is, that sometimes I think forgotten about. Not wholly, but in part by Shonen that has come after. For example, the goofiness in Dragon Ball Z is cartoonish. It is meant to be taken like it's a cartoon, because it is a cartoon, and there's an elevation of anime to be something more than a cartoon from another country in lots of people's heads, and I think in a lot of, like, the anime world's heads. But it's not. It's just a cartoon from another country. With different influences and artistic takes, yes. But, like, anime and Tom and Jerry are the same fucking things. They are both animations that, like, I can guarantee you that animators in Japan have watched tons of Tom and fucking Jerry. But the, and like, if, from what I understand, Tom and Jerry is quite huge. From what I know, because I've seen it with my own eyeball, Tom and Jerry is huge around the world. Unnervingly so. But the kind of like joyous, fun, childlike joy that is in this show is oftentimes left out of other shows. Like, if you look at, I'll focus on Demon Slayer again. Like, the fun moments in Demon Slayer don't give you as much just like contact high fucking joy as the fun moments in Dragon Ball. They just don't. Because that's not that show's style, but also because that show maintains this kind of self-seriousness that Dragon Ball just wasn't concerned with. And if you look at probably the next best shonen anime thing from kind of that time period, which is, I would think, Yu Yu Hakusho. Yu Yu Hakusho has that fucking goofiness. Like, Yusuke and, like, Kuwabara and the gang are, like, goofy, weird, like, total badasses. But they're also totally fucking goofy weirdos. There's a scene where in the Saint Beast arc of Yu Hakusho, where Kuwabara is fighting Byakko. And he's fighting Byakko's like big, like monstrous, like hair tiger thing. And he gets them all around this tower and he extends his spirit sword to basically be like a hula hoop. And catch them all, like, and skewer them all in a circle. And one of the other fucking three of them leans over to, and in the, like, in out of this, out of, like, I think it's Kurama, Hiei, and Yusuke are standing on the side watching this happen. And Kurama just, like, I think leans over to Hiei and Yusuke is like, do you think he knows it's a circle? Like, There's this tendency towards self-seriousness in shonen action shows that lets them only be so goofy before they have to like self-correct from that. And if you look at specifically, actually not even Yu Yu Hakusho, but if you look at specifically Dragon Ball Z and actually Hunter x Hunter, the kind of part of the genius of both of those shows, and Hunter x Hunter is 9 zillion% inspired by Dragon Ball Z. Just 9 zillion%. Do not pretend that it's not. Is that both of the main characters in those shows have this kind of like childlike joy that pervades them at all times. Yes, they get deadly serious, and yes, they can get deadly serious and determined. But they're also just fun-loving goofballs, and they're allowed to be. And there's something really valuable, I think, about a show saying, like, you can be an adult, you can be the most powerful person in the world, and you can have fun. You don't have to be super self-serious and super, like, buttoned up, tie straight adult if you're, like, having fun with it is kind of part of it. Being goofy is part of it. And so I don't often talk about work here, but it just struck me. Somebody I work with, a client of ours in my job, is a serious Lego builder. Like, he built the wrecked, cracked in half by an iceberg Titanic Lego build, which I recently got back into Legos because it's a nice focusing thing that I can, like, it's almost meditative is the best way I would describe it. But I'm not going to do anything like that. Anytime soon, at least. But the person I work with was like, that's so childish. Like, what? Like, I can't stand when people just do like childish shit like that. And both me and just about everybody in the office just like looked at him like, oh. And we kind of felt bad for him. Because It's not about... People mistake children as being childish and immature when they're excited about things. But what you're not seeing all the time is, and you're certainly not admitting all the time, is like the reason why kids get excited about things like that is because they truly take joy in stuff. And you can mock, you know, people who still love Dragon Ball Z all the time, but god damn, what would it be like to be that into Dragon Ball Super, to be that into Dragon Ball, to like love something that fucking much? How good would that feel? How good does it feel when you do love something that much? When you are like uncontainable, like a 2-year-old. The thing about Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z is they give a permission to the viewer and a structure to the viewer to be like that, to be super serious but also be super seriously strong and like have a really good core, a really good moral center, but also be goofy, be fallible, be to not be so self-serious that you can't have fun. And that, like, that's the best. And if you look at things that people believe are the best shonen things since Dragon Ball Z, oftentimes the best things have that goofiness to them, have that earnest, fucked up goofiness to them. Look at Fullmetal Alchemist. Anytime Ed ever feels like he's getting called short, the show basically stops and it's like, hey, no, this is the joke we make. You look at Hellsing, for example. Hellsing has whole weird little shorts that are so unnerving, but so funny, because otherwise that show takes itself so seriously, and then it just pauses and is like, nope, we're not doing this. We can't keep a straight face while doing this. We'll go crazy. You look at something like Trigun, either the new Trigun, Trigun Stampede, or the old Trigun. That show has moments where it can be so self-serious and so earnest, but it also has moments, large swaths of it, where Vash is just like a goofball. He's just a weirdo, just in the desert, running around. And then you look at things that aren't necessarily bad by any stretch, but can't get that same kind of long tail to them. And you see, like, you see Demon Slayer. Demon Slayer, the kind of fervor people have for something like Fullmetal Alchemist or Dragon Ball Z or even Trigun is something that will probably never happen for Demon Slayer, because Demon Slayer takes itself very seriously. It has to consider everything it does, even so much so even something as adorable and fun as the tiny Nezuko joke in the first season when the insect Hashira is chasing her. That's adorable and people think it's so much fun. But it had, like, it's rooted in a functional thing. Like, the reason that Nezuko did that was so she didn't get the shit chopped out of her. And the thing about Dragon Ball is that it would, like, a show like Dragon Ball Z, it would take moments to have fun with that shit. If you, even something like GT, like the misguided nightmare that was GT, took a minute
to have fun with the fact that like Goku turned into a fucking kid again. And that, and like when shows get that part of the formula that Dragon Ball Z really perfected and passed off to the next generation of shonen action shows, correct? They're generally more successful for it. Like I said, people regard Full Metal Alchemist, and specifically Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, as one of the best things ever made. Full stop. Like, if you watch Danny Mata's, like, watch through of it, like, afterwards, he's like, you know, I know in my heart that my anime list ranking of Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood is fucked up. But I also don't not agree with it. But I also, I also kind of agree with it. Like, I see where that's coming from. It's astoundingly good. And a lot of that is because the creator of that thing was probably looking at something like Dragon Ball and how you can do, and how you can, and the kind of vibes that you can pump into a story to make it work and flow better. Because the thing about the real thing about Dragon Ball Z from the beginning, from Radish to Cell, that really sells it and makes it work is it has a vibe that still kind of survives in the best moments from Dragon Ball Super now. But it has this, like, the vibes are so good and so specific and can shift so seamlessly from goofy as hell to serious as anything you've ever seen, that it keeps you going. It keeps you going even through the badly paced stuff. And to the point where you look at some, probably the most self-serious part of Dragon Ball is the Frieza Saga. The Frieza Saga, and even then you have Bulma running around looking for the Namekian Dragon Balls. Like, Bulma fills the function of in the Namek Saga of kind of the comedic cutaway character. Because she's just kind of bumbling around, like, doing her fucking best. And she's on this random planet that she's never been outside of Earth. But she's on this random planet, and she's doing her goddamn best. And there's fucking freak shows running around, like, dropping bombs on each other. And she's just like, I'm trying to find fucking Dragon Balls. What the fuck is happening? Oh, Jesus Christ. And but you look at the Cell Saga, and you have Hercule Satan just off on the side being a goofball for no goddamn reason. And before the Saiyan Saga, before the Saiyan Saga and before the Buu Saga, you have all the Z Fighters attempting, doing their best, and it's so much fun doing the goddamn best to try and be normal martial artists again. Like, except for Vegeta, who's just kind of putting up with it. And, like, there's a great scene late in the, like, in the original run of Dragon Ball, late in Dragon Ball Z, where they're all, like, Goku's gotten a free pass, he gets to come down from Otherworld and take part in this, in, like, a one-day thing where he gets to, like, hang out with his family and fight in the world tournament. And they all agree, like, listen, we're not gonna freak people out. We're not gonna show up here and, like, just be like, you have no chance. It is, like, the 10 of us or nothing. we're not trying to break people's spirits. And so they all go off to this giant punching machine. And they do like little love taps. Like even Krillin. Krillin, by the way, hilariously, canonically, Krillin is the strongest human. He's just the strongest human to exist in the Dragon Ball Z world. In the Dragon Ball franchise, period. He's just the strongest human. But like there's a scene where like Krillin goes up and he does a quick little like not even full fist, just like one knuckle. He just pops the machine and it shoots up higher than a higher number than anybody's ever seen. And it's like 400 pounds per square inch. The guy looks, it's like, oh fuck. What the hell did he do? And even Krillin's like, that was the lightest punch I know how to do. That was the lightest thing I could do, and it'd still be a punch. And everybody's like doing some version of that. And then Vegeta just pissed that he's like, I'm not playing this dumb game. Walks up and fucking like pulls back and destroys the whole damn thing. And it's goofy because it's goofy at that point because it's using the built up, your built up understanding of like, these guys are the strongest people in these guys are the strongest things in the galaxy. The one actual human in the group, like full-blooded human, is the strongest human in existence ever. Period. End. There is no stronger human. There will be no stronger human, probably. He is weak when compared to the cavalcades of, like, freak shows and aliens that are next to him, but he is the strongest human. And, like, he is stronger than fucking Yamcha. And, like, let's be clear. The joke about Yamcha is that he's a fucking loser, but Yamcha is a like, the thing you have to understand about the cast of Dragon Ball Z is, like, it's a very narrow thing you're seeing. Like, when you've, like, oh, Krillin is the weakest of the current, like, active cast of Dragon Ball Z, of Dragon Ball. It, once again, Krillin is the strongest human being. And that gag with the punching machine is, like, this gag that they pull once they've had all the build-up of, like, these guys have fought otherworldly horrors, and, like, they're fine. Like, they're not even, they're in peak physical condition still. And they all want to go take part in the World Martial Arts Championship? That's adorable. And the thing about, I think the real thing about Dragon Ball Z that strikes me is, when I stop to think about it, is that there's this build up, there's this constant, like, piling on, and I think the thing that Dragon Ball Super has kind of lost in what it is now, at least from what I'm not currently following Dragon Ball Super, but, from what I've heard, it's that there's this, like, build up in Dragon Ball Z, and then there's a plateau, and then they come all the way back down for a couple minutes. There's this, like, resting period. The one shonen property I can kind of pinpoint that does that very well, did that super well, other than, once again, and I can't stress this enough, Hunter x Hunter, is, if you look at something like, if you look at My Hero Academia, and I've talked about these in-between lessons ad nauseum, but I'm not going to bring up my favorite one, which is the one with Twice, and it's about, like, good superpower versus bad superpower, but I've talked about that a bunch on this show. But they have these break moments in My Hero Academia, where everything's allowed to kind of, just kind of, the heat's allowed to let off. Like the build up, is still there. It's still like right outside the door, but inside of this door, it's all warm feelings and happy hugs, for lack of a better phrase, I guess. But that's what lets that fandom get close to those characters. One of the most infamous episodes of Dragon Ball, which I don't think I've ever seen, is the driver's license episode, when just Piccolo confirms himself to be black by just looking like a black guy in the 90s, and Goku go to get a driver's license. Now, that's widely understood to be filler, and I get that. And I've talked about this before with Shonen anime, and I think the Dragon Ball, and I suspect Dragon Ball as a property and Dragon Ball Z as a property also pioneered this in this way. But Shonen shows, when they're popular, are so popular and run for so long, they have to have that filler. Or else it would outpace their source material. Until you get to something that transcends the source material, like Dragon Ball. How should I put this? Shows that don't feel that are engineered not to have that, or don't have that, or have the benefit of that, of the seasonal structure instead of the weekly structure that Shonen had in the 80s and 90s and early aughts, when they had a weekly structure and they were like had to put an episode on TV every week. Shows that have a seasonal structure can avoid that, because they take big breaks and the manga keeps going, and then there's a lot of content whenever the next season is planned to come out. So they're constantly at an advantage in that way, but also you don't have to come up with scenarios where you just get to spend time with the characters necessarily. And, like, the filler in Naruto is egregious. The filler in Boruto is borderline criminal. But the thing that those things, that weird space provides, is you get to spend time with those characters. Now, those characters have to be able to be fleshed out enough for you to want to spend time with them. I think that's probably where Boruto falls apart, because, like, until it sounds like recently, you didn't really want to hang out with the shitty kid that Boruto was. But with Dragon Ball, because they had the kind of arc of Vegeta's character, but they also had, you had all this time spent previously with Goku and with Goku and everybody else, you had this set of characters who, like, you felt like you knew. If you watched Dragon Ball, you knew. You hung out with Goku as a kid. You hung out with Bulma. You hung out with Yamcha, Puar, Oolong, all that stuff. You watched them beat the shit out of the Red Ribbon Army constantly. And what Toriyama made sure to do was he made sure to never forget about that stuff. So, like I said, Vegeta started out as a villain. Piccolo started out as a villain. So much so that even now, Piccolo's, like, quote-unquote moveset, like, his superpower, are all, like, villain superpowers. Like, he has laser beam eyes, and he, like, has a mouth cannon blast. Those are, like, that's bad guy shit. And by remembering that Piccolo used to be a bad guy and he would obviously not stop using those powers, Toriyama is working in world building for people to find when they watch these shows. The attacks that Vegeta uses in the Saiyan Saga are the same as many of the attacks Vegeta uses in to this day. Big Bang is still like a thing he does. And that attention to detail is all throughout Dragon Ball. Like I said, they never forget about Yajirobe. The show never forgets about characters. The announcer from the tournament arcs that were the main deal in Dragon Ball is still the announcer in Dragon Ball Z. Early in Dragon Ball Z, you meet a reporter who's like, wait, you know, who's talking to Yajirobe. He's like, you know Goku? Like, the strongest man in the world? The man who saved the world? That guy who saved the world from, like, destruction 5 years ago? Goddamn. And by doing that, you get this build-up. That allows for something like Dragon Ball and a property like Dragon Ball to exist in a way that feels natural. Because if you look at something like say JJK. JJK is attempting to pull a Dragon Ball and a Dragon Ball Z relationship on a much smaller scale, much quicker. JJK Zero is the Dragon Ball. JJK proper is the Dragon Ball Z. But it's all jumbled. And it's not like those relationships are not as steeped as if you had a full property leading into another full property. Like I said, what's it called? Naruto. Naruto to Boruto. Kind of fumbled it because they didn't make a character who was as compelling as Naruto. It took them a long time to get to that compelling feeling again, and they had to pull a bunch of weird fucking tricks to do it. And I just want to do this because I think that if you are fairly new to anime and you like came in through shonen anime and like you have a fairly new experience with Dragon Ball Z, to you, you look out and you see the world kind of dunking on the thing you like. Only the thing you have to remember is people my age, people older than me, we all watched Dragon Ball Z. We all did it. We all, like, sat in front of our TVs and watched that. We all had that experience. And we all see the reverberations of it. And we see how influential Toriyama's work was to the anime world. The last example I'll really give here is I was in Philadelphia for work 2 weeks ago. And I was walking down the street. I saw a black guy walking down the street in the other direction wearing a Dragon Ball Z shirt. Because Dragon Ball Z, for specifically black anime culture, is huge. Is massive. It is understood basically by everybody that Piccolo is a black dude. The dynamics are all black. They just are. Mr. Popo notwithstanding. Mr. Popo is, and say it with me now, a problem. But, and like the like weight and like the struggles and trials and like manliness and all of that stuff all really resonates in the black anime community. Right down to, like, Bulma's relationship with Vegeta is, like, a good woman with, like, a ghetto-ass, fucked-up idiot. And Bulma is fabulous. She's just fabulous. And that all showed you how big the show was. Why it is so big? Why it is such a big deal that I think he was like 64 or something. He was like, Toriyama was young for him to just pass on. It's a huge deal. Because it wasn't just that he did Dragon Ball, it's that he, like I said, he did Sandland. He did, there's a new Dragon Ball thing coming out like next year or something called Dragon Ball Daima. He did Dr. Slump. He did character design for tons of things. Once again, Dragon Quest. And I never thought I'd be saying this in my life, honestly. And I probably would have at some point, but that's it. That's all I got for this. I hope you liked it. Most episodes of Oz will not end as dramatic as this. But Akira Toriyama, rest in power.